And we are joined now by Dr. Colman O'Loughlin, consultant in critical care medicine at the Mater Hospital in Dublin and president of the Intensive Care Society of Ireland. Good morning, Dr. O'Loughlin.
Good morning, Audrey.
You're very welcome to the programme. Last night, as we were reporting, 290 people in hospital with COVID, 31 of them in ICU. How would you characterise the hospitalisations and the admissions to ICU at the moment steadily rising?
The hospital's numbers seem to be steadily rising at a slow rate, but it's quite steady. The ICU numbers are a little bit more difficult to interpret. Over the last week, they've been quite stable. For example, over the last 24 hours, there's been 4 admissions. But also, don't forget that a lot of these patients get better in ICU and leave, so we had 4 discharges. So the numbers have balanced out in intensive care. So it's a little bit more difficult to interpret those. But overall, it's certainly worrying for a slow rise across the sector. And I suppose in projection terms, that's the major concern. The rate of this rise is the real concern. We don't know what that will be. And anything that can kind of slow that rate of rise is probably obviously a benefit to the hospital sector.
And I suppose the important question then is, what is capacity like at the moment? How many free ICU beds are there across the public health system this morning?
As this morning, there's approximately 40 beds. I looked up the system just a few minutes back in the intensive care. They're spread all over the country. And I suppose that's also reflective of the fact that over the last week, more cases of COVID presenting to ICUs have come up all over the country as well. So there's a bit of capacity in the system at the moment. There are some hospitals who are disproportionately affected by this, just by the layout of those hospitals. Not all hospitals and ICUs have the same geographical layout. But there are some who are struggling with that aspect of it. But there are a lot of hospitals who are expecting this today and all of this week to perform as normal as they would have done this time last year and carry on with all the major activities that go on in a hospital. So as things stand, that's still achievable, which is very, very important. So we're full across the sector, more or less, in a lot of the major ICUs anyway. But again, that's a normal situation for ICUs over the last 30, 40 years in intensive care. We've always been full, and we discharge patients on the basis of new patients coming in, so it's often the case that we are full. But we are coping at the moment,
and we all hope and pray that there will be no surge this time round in this second wave of the pandemic. But if there was to be a surge, what capacity is there in ICU? What can you do to increase the number of ICU critical care beds?
We have fairly well laid out plans as to where we can put surged patients. So these are patients who where the capacity goes beyond what current intensive care capacity allows. So every hospital has identified spaces for those patients to go into. All those spaces have been well kitted out with the relevant equipment, including ventilators. So we have identified over 100 extra beds that people can go into fairly quickly if we do surge above normal capacity. The concern lies around the staffing for those beds, and what we don't have a clear number on is how many extra staff will be available to staff those beds. ICU staffing is quite intensive, pardon the pun, but is intensive care for that reason. So you need 6 nurses to open up 1 bed, and that is a concern. They don't necessarily exist in the community. They have to be trained up. Intensive care nursing is a 6-month training program, but another 6 months of kind of work experience to get to the level of a independent practitioner, if you like, of intensive care nursing. So it's a difficult road to travel, looking into the surge, largely because of staffing, not necessarily because of actual geographical bed space capacity that's there. It's just we don't know how many nurses we have, and clean great doctors and allied health professionals to staff those beds should we go there.
But we were told at the height of the first wave that there were over 500 ICU beds available. Were they not all staffed?
No, that's a simple answer. These are all potential beds, and I think that's important. So the HSE were very involved early on, trying to get a kind of surge plan per hospital and collate all those plans into one kind of national database of potential spaces. But they genuinely are just that, potential spaces. I can show any person who's interested walk around the Mater Hospital and show people where those beds are and where those ventilators are. But what I can't to find is the staff necessarily to staff those beds. It is a huge task even to think about finding the number of staff to efficiently run those beds. So we're talking about nurses who may never have worked intensive care before, have been asked to come in and help out. A lot of these people will have training during March, April, May and June. That all slowed down, of course, because they all went back to their baseline roles in the hospital as of July when we fully opened up again. And it's not necessarily straightforward to get them back again in for training because they are continuing to do those baseline jobs. So, for example, if I had to take a nurse who's currently working in the kind of post-operative care unit after theatre, that's busy at the moment, so we can't take them out of there and expect that service to run normally to train them. So there's a lot of challenges. The HSE are aware of them and they're trying to come around solutions and fund.
But of course, not all of those ICU beds were needed. The ICU reached nowhere near that level of capacity first time round.
Oh, thankfully not. No, it was a blessing. We got away with it in that sense. Certainly every patient pretty much was catered for within existing ICU capacity. But for that to have happened, a huge amount of sacrifice was made by patients who were scheduled for surgery at the time, and talking about cardiac, cancer, vascular surgeries, and a lot of others. They were all postponed, and they've had to make huge sacrifices. It happened largely because of a huge amount of effort by the public to flatten the curve, as they call it, and it really dramatically reduced transmission rates in the community. So we saw a fairly sudden cessation of ICU admissions around the end of April, start of May, largely because the virus transmission was flattened.
Exactly. So to that end, you think it is now time to increase restrictions?
Yes, I mean, you know, we're being kind of putting out a message that we can care for these patients better than before. That's not necessarily the case either. You know, a lot of the drugs that we use, we don't know if they're that good at treating this virus thus far. So we're back to kind of supportive medication and supportive therapies in the ICU. And what is known and what we've proven the last time is that reduction of virus transmission in the community is the only proven way to reduce hospital and ICU admissions. But we're missing one major factor this time around, I think, and that's the fear factor. And that's why I think I support anything that would reduce virus transmission in the public. But what I'm noticing, and this is not me necessarily speaking from intensive care hat or ICSI hat, it's just an observer in the community that, whereas in March, if I was walking down the street, people just crossed the road to wish me well. There's a fear factor there that's not there now. So moving to level 3 to 4 to 5 is only useful if it gets the compliance that's needed. So yes, I'm hopeful that if we do move to these levels of increased restrictions, that the effect of those will be seen and the compliance will improve to get that effect. Because if we don't get the effect, the restrictions won't mean anything.
Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Coleman O'Loughlin, consultant in critical care medicine at the Mater and president of the Intensive Care Society of Ireland.